RNZ National, it's Friday afternoon and time to check in with Nicola Tookie. She's the Threatened Species Ambassador for the Department of Conservation. She joins us each week to introduce another critter of the week, one of our native species needing our help. And Nicola joins me now. Hello there.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. You're celebrating a birthday this week, but not your own.
No, yes, but not really a birthday, actually, an anniversary, if you like. So the Wednesday was the 90th anniversary of Richard Henry's death. Who was Richard Henry, you might say?
Who was Richard Henry?
So Richard Henry is probably...
Sorry, Music Awards last night. You may have to play interviewer and interviewee today.
That's fine. I totally understand it. I imagine you're feeling a little bit jaded today. Although I tell you what wasn't jaded was your suit. That was fantastic. I have shoes made of the same material. I thought you looked very dapper.
Thanks.
Richard Henry was our very first ranger. So to all the nature nerds in New Zealand, they'll be familiar with Richard Henry. He was sort of, the grandfather of modern conservation in New Zealand. And it's really a kind of interesting tale. So he became the curator of, the caretaker of Resolution Island down in Fiordland in the late 1890s. Prior to that, he'd come from Ireland and then to Australia, and then he'd moved out to New Zealand. He was a bushman. He lived around sort of the Wakatipu and Southland regions, and he railed against, with many other academics and others at the time, the introduction of stoats and ferrets and weasels,
really?
Which had been planned. Yeah, because he knew he could foresee what was going to happen, that they would turn their attention to the birds. So, the farming community at the time were desperate, because rabbits had sort of taken over so many farms that farmers were literally walking off the land in some instances. And so they lobbied and lobbied the government to please be able to bring in these critters we're all very familiar with now, the mustelids, so the stoats and the ferrets and the weasels. And at the same time, the London Zoological Society, the Royal Society, and some academics in Otago, the university, were railing against the introduction of these animals. And Richard Henry also was, because of the view that the quite correct view, as it turned out, that the introduction of those animals would be the end of life as as we knew it for the birds like kakapo and kiwi, which were everywhere at the time. And when Richard Henry was a bushman in sort of South Westland, he wrote of the disappearance of all the bird life, and wow, that he witnessed in the space of 7 years, all kakapo and kiwi disappearing from the area he was living in. And then a lot of the public, primarily the academics again, were saying to the government, we've got to have a place to keep this stuff safe. We should have a wildlife reserve. It should be Resolution Island, and Richard Henry should be the caretaker. And the government, kind of as governments sometimes do, mucked around a bit, and he got really despondent. And at one point tried to shoot himself in the head twice. He's had a pretty tragic, sad life. And so he was up in Auckland. He was waiting to hear about whether or not he was going to become caretaker of Resolution. It was all caught up in bureaucracy land. And so he shot himself in the head, and the bullet sort of lodged in his skull in a way that didn't go through. And then he had another go pistol misfired, and at that point he thought, maybe I wasn't supposed to do this, and took himself off to hospital. And a week later found out he had a job. And so the reason he is famous is because while he was there, he realized that the key to saving the birds that remained were getting them onto offshore islands. And so he had a dinghy, and he would fill it up to the gunwales with food and supplies. He had a conservation dog called Lassie, and of course we use conservation dogs every day, and which he muzzled, and he used Lassie to help him find kakapo and kiwi. And over the space of about 5 years, he rode 572 birds to offshore islands, including Resolution Island. But then in 1900, I think he got a report of a stoat, and then he saw one, and then he kind of was totally despondent. He thought all his work had been undone. And so his story kind of got lost. So, I think I said last week that he should be on our money. He should be as famous as Ed Hillary, as Kate Shepherd, in terms of the legacy he left us, because we've now cleared a third of all our offshore islands from pests, and we're looking to do the whole of New Zealand. Wouldn't he be so proud?
Yeah.
And of
And
course, you know,
what
that.
foresight as well.
Yeah, at a time really when no one was thinking about conservation, you know, he just disregarded that, shrugged it off, and battled on, and kind of teaches us that as long as you're taking action, there's still hope. There's always a chance to turn things around. And I know that my colleague was asked earlier this week, young Erica, who works with me, what would Richard Henry say if he was here today? And she said he would have said about bloody time. So I think it's important that we recognise this man and bring his story to light. If anyone's really interested, there's a wonderful book written by Susanna and John Hill, which you can get from a bookstore in Christchurch, actually. You can email them and, you know, do it on the interweb, which is the story of his life. And it's really, really interesting reading. It's called Richard Henry of Resolution Island. So there you go. That's your history lesson for the day.
Okay, and so predators were her, it was his big concern, and today's Critter of the Week does suffer some sort of predator, some loss from predators, but also habitat as part of the story, the usual story really, for the climbing galaxias.
Yes, so the Coarul, or the climbing galaxias, or the Galaxias brevipinnis, this is one of my favorite freshwater fish species, because it's got this wonderful adaptational behavior where it can climb vertical barriers, which I think is amazing for a fish that, you know, when they're juveniles, they make up part of our whitebait. And so what you might not know about the Coarul is that they can grow to, you know, up to 28 centimeters long, but we generally find them about half that size. And they are from that wonderful galaxid family with the smattering of beautiful, like, sort of galaxy kind of looking spots across their backs. Galaxids aren't endemic to New Zealand, so they are found here, but they're also found in Australia,
Oh, are they?
and particularly in Tasmania. And they generally live on the bottom of the streams that they inhabit. And what's cool about that is when you think of a fish, the pectoral fins, those are the ones that sit just behind the gills, they tend to generally stick out the sides of a fish so you can swim along. But with Coarul, they sort of tilt down and are quite broad and almost act like feet on the bottom.
And they can do some
So
pretty amazing escape acts too, huh?
yeah, that's right. So the most incredible thing, and if you're a whitebaiter, you'll be really familiar with them, because even the juveniles can climb. And so really good whitebaiters will be familiar with seeing Coarul juveniles kind of trying to climb up the sides of their bucket. And that's how you can kind of detect which ones
Wow,
are the Coarul.
that's very
Yeah.
cool.
We know that they're found upstream of high waterfalls. We've got photos of galaxids hanging onto like water flow outlets in places like Rotorua for dear life. My particular favourite story is that when I lived in Otago, I worked for a doc down there was a two-story brick house that had a leaky spouting. So the water was just constantly running down the side of this building, and they found Coarul like up on the second floor, if you like, where it
What?
had climbed up the side of this building. So they're excellent climbers. They used to be a really important food source for iwi in central North Island, so Te Arawa and Tuwharetoa. And so generally anywhere around those central North Island lakes, they had three different methods of actually capturing Coarul, in Hinaki, and another couple of trap methods. And it was a really important way of life for those iwi at the time. But over time, we've lost a lot of Coarul, and there's this particular spin-off of that I want to talk about as well. So because of the forest cover that's been lost and replaced by pasture, it's been really hard for the Coarul. They need really cool temperatures, and they need nice, fresh, clean, fast-flowing water. They're eating underwater freshwater invertebrates, and so those things can only tolerate really, you know, the kinds of invertebrates they're eating can only tolerate really high-quality streams. So, you know, once again, the whole idea of fencing and planting streams becomes really crucial, because temperature is important, water quality is important, and shade and having habitat within those streams where it's not just mud pouring off the banks.
It needs the perfect recipe, eh? The recipe that's been developed over hundreds of millions of years.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing is, this is my favourite fact that most people don't know about koarau, which is they are intrinsically linked to the survival of kākahi or freshwater mussels. And so what happens is the freshwater mussel has this tiny little larvae form called a glaucidia, which happens to be now one of my favourite words. And the glaucidia larvae basically use the koarau like a bus. So they hatch out of an egg or and then they tack on to basically hitchhike onto the koarau and use the fish to get up and down river systems and then jump off and decide to become freshwater mussels at particular suitable points, right?
Amazing.
And if we lose koarau, we lose the underwater bus system for the freshwater mussel. Freshwater mussels play a really important role, everyone out there, in water quality because they're filtering the water and making it cleaner. So you want to have kākahi or freshwater mussels in your creeks, which means you definitely need koarau because they are the transport mechanism that the baby freshwater mussels need to get around.
Can you please describe the Galaxias, the climbing Galaxias, and then appraise its attractiveness for us?
Sure. So these ones are they just look like a little tube, but they're very elongated, very beautiful markings, almost like sort of like a cross between a tiger and a leopard looking markings. And yeah, they are really beautiful fish. I've seen some big adults, and when you look at the adults, they have this lovely big kind of blunt, kind of lovely mouth and those enormous pectoral fins which let them kind of stomp around on the bottom. So I reckon they're at least a seven. They're beautiful. Think about that next time you have a whitebait patty, eh?
Yeah, well, I mean, probably whitebait is a problem for them, but also those rainbow trout seem to be smashing them as well. It's not looking very good. And you got to, I've mentioned this before, but freshwater fish don't get a lot of love on the, when we're celebrating native animals. They're just seen as a bit muddy and a bit boring, aren't they? But they're very special when you look at them up close.
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. The more we get to know them, the more you can fall in love with them. So get out there this summer and get to know your freshwater fish.
Beautiful. And if you'd like to have a look at this one in particular, there's a picture on our website, rnz.co.nz / Jessie. And Nicola, I also forgot to tell you, we got loads of happy emails from people who had received funding through our Crit of the Week t-shirts last week. So you've made lots of people happy around New Zealand.
Oh, well, that's exciting. Well done. Well done, everybody.
Catch you next week.
Thanks, Jesse. You too. Bye.